Chapter 25. Her alone, Anne wandered about the colonel's bungalow as an informer does about a public house, marking the incomings and the outgoings of the family, and longing to seize the moment when Miss Jowler, unbiased by her mother or her papa, might listen, perhaps, to my eloquence, and melt at the tale of my love. But it would not do. Old Jowler seemed to have taken all of a sudden to such a fit of domesticity, that there was no finding him out of doors, and his rhubarb-colored wife, I believe, that her skin gave the first idea of our regimental breeches, who before had been gadding ceaselessly abroad, and poking her broad nose into every meanage in the cantonment, stopped faithfully at home with her spouse. My only chance was to beard the old couple in their den, and ask them at once for their cub. So I called one day at tiffin. Old Jowler was always happy to have my company at this meal. It amused him, he said, to see me drink Hodgson's pale ale. I drank 234 dozen the first year I was in Bengal, and it was no small piece of fun, certainly, to see old Mrs. Jowler attack the curry pot. She was exactly the color of it, as I have had already the honor to remark, and she swallowed the mixture with a gusto which was never equaled, except by my poor friend Dando apropos duiters. She consumed the first three platefuls with a fork and spoon, like a Christian. But as she warmed to her work, the old hag would throw away her silver implements, and dragging the dishes towards her, go to work with her hands, flip the rice into her mouth with her fingers, and stow away a quantity of eatables sufficient for a sepoy company. But why do I diverge from the main point of my story? Julia, then, Jowler, and Mrs. J. were at luncheon. The dear girl was in the act to sable her a glass of Hodgson as I entered. "How do you do, Mr. Gadgen?" said the old hag, leeringly. "At a bit o' curry pot," and she thrust the dish towards me, securing a heap as it passed. "Hat! Gagey, my boy, how do," said the fat colonel. "Hat! Run through the body? Got well again, have some Hodgson run through your body too." And at this, I may say, coarse joke alluding to the fact that in these hot climates the ale oozes out as it were from the pores of the skin, old Jowler laughed. A host of swarthy chobders, kitmatkers, sices, kinsamas, and babachis laughed too, as they provided me, unasked, with the grateful fluid. Swallowing six tumblers of it, I paused nervously for a moment, and then said, "Babachi, kinsama, balibalu hoga." The black ruffians took the hint and retired. "Colonel and Mrs. Jowler," said I solemnly, "we are alone. And you, Miss Jowler, you are alone too. That is, I mean, I take this opportunity to another glass of ale, if you please, to express, once for all, before departing on a dangerous campaign," Julia turned pale, "ever entering, I say, upon a war which may stretch in the dust my high-raised hopes and me, to express my hopes, while life still remains to me, and to declare in the face of heaven, earth, and Colonel Jowler, that I love you, Julia." The colonel, astonished, let fall a steel fork, which stuck quivering for some minutes in the calf of my leg, but I heeded not the paltry interruption. "S, by yon bright heaven," continued I love you, Julia. "I respect my commander, I esteem your excellent and bodious mother. Tell me, before I leave you, if I may hope for a return of my affection. Say that you love me, and I will do such deeds in this coming war as shall make you proud of the name of your Gahagan." The old woman, as I delivered these touching words, stared, snapped, and ground her teeth, like an enraged monkey. Julia was now red, now white. The colonel stretched forward, took the fork out of the calf of my leg, wiped it, and then seized a bundle of letters which I had remarked by his side. "A cornet," said he, in a voice choking with emotion. "A pitiful, beggarly Irish cornet aspire to the hand of Julia Jowler. Gag, Gahagan, are you mad, or laughing at us? Look at these letters, young man, at these letters. I say 124 epistles from every part of India, not including one from the Governor General, and six from his brother, Colonel Wellesley. 124 proposals for the hand of Miss Jowler. Cormac Gahagan, he continued, I wish to think well of you. You are the bravest, the most modest, and, perhaps, the handsomest man in our corps, but you have not got a single rupee. You ask me for Julia, and you do not possess even an anna. Here the old rogue grinned, as if he had made a capital pun. Oh, no, said he, waxing good-natured. Gagey, my boy, it is nonsense. Julia, love, retire with your mama. This silly young gentleman will remain, and smoke a pipe with me. I took one. It was the bitterest chillum I ever smoked in my life. ... I am not going to give here an account of my military services. They will appear in my great national autobiography, in 40 volumes, which I am now preparing for the press. I was with my regiment in all Wellesley's brilliant campaigns. Then taking dock, I traveled across the country northeastward, and had the honor of fighting by the side of Lord Lake at Lasswarie, Deeg, Farrukhabad, Fudiger, and Berthpur. But I will not boast of my actions. The military man knows them, my sovereign appreciates them. If asked who was the bravest man of the Indian Army, there is not an officer belonging to it who would not cry at once, Gahagan. The fact is, I was desperate. I cared not for life, deprived of Julia Jowler. With Julia's stony looks ever before my eyes, her father's stern refusal in my ears, I did not care, at the close of the campaign, again to seek her company, or to press my suit. We were 18 months on service, marching, and counter-marching, and fighting almost every other day. To the world I did not seem altered, but the world only saw the face, and not the seared and blighted heart within me. My valor, always desperate, now reached to a pitch of cruelty. I tortured my grooms and grass cutters for the most trifling offense or error. I never in action spared a man. I sheared off 309 heads in the course of that single campaign. Some influence, equally melancholy, seemed to have fallen upon poor old Jowler. About 6 months after we had left Dum Dum, he received a parcel of letters from Benners, whither his wife had retired with her daughter, and so deeply did they seem to weigh upon his spirits, that he ordered 11 men of his regiment to be flogged within 2 days. But it was against the blacks that he chiefly turned his wrath. Our fellows, in the heat and hurry of the campaign, were in the habit of dealing rather roughly with their prisoners, to extract treasure from them. They used to pull their nails out by the root, to boil them in kedgeree pots, to flog them, and dress their wounds with cayenne pepper, and so on. Jowler, when he heard of these proceedings, which before had always justly exasperated him, he was a humane and kind little man, used now to smile fiercely and say, "D the black scoundrels! Serve them right, serve them right." One day, about a couple of miles in advance of the column, I had been on a foraging party with a few dragoons, and was returning peaceably to camp, when of a sudden a troop of Marathas burst on us from a neighboring mango tope, in which they had been hidden. In an instant three of my men's saddles were empty, and I was left with but 7 more to make head against at least 30 of these vagabond black horsemen. I never saw in my life a nobler figure than the leader of the troop mounted on a splendid black Arab. He was as tall, very nearly, as myself. He wore a steel cap and a shirt of mail, and carried a beautiful French carbine, which had already done execution upon 2 of my men. I saw that our only chance of safety lay in the destruction of this man. I shouted to him in a voice of thunder in the Hindustani tongue, of course, "Stop, dog, if you dare, and encounter a man." In reply his lance came whirling in the air over my head, and mortally transfixed poor Fogarty of ours, who was behind me. Grinding my teeth and swearing horribly, I drew that scimitar which never yet failed its blow, asterisk, and rushed at the Indian. He came down at full gallop, his own sword making 10,000 gleaming circles in the air, shrieking his cry of battle. Asterisk in my affair with McGillicuddy, I was fool enough to go out with small swords, miserable weapons only fit for tailors. Geog. G, the contest did not last an instant. With my first blow I cut off his sword arm at the wrist, my second I leveled at his head. I said that he wore a steel cap, with a gilt iron spike of 6 inches, and a hood of chain mail. I rose in my stirrups and delivered, T. George. My sword caught the spike exactly on the point, split it sheer in two, cut crashing through the steel cap and hood, and was only stopped by a ruby which he wore in his back plate. His head, cut clean in two between the eyebrows and nostrils, even between the two front teeth, fell one side on each shoulder, and he galloped until his horse was stopped by my men, who were not a little amused at the feat. As I had expected, the remaining ruffians fled on seeing their leader's fate. I took home his helmet by way of curiosity, and we made a single prisoner, who was instantly carried before old Jowler. We asked the prisoner the name of the leader of the troop. He said it was Chowder Lowell. Chowder Lowell! Shrieked Colonel Jowler. Fate! Thy hand is here! He rushed wildly into his tent the next day, applied for leave of absence. Gutch took the command of the regiment, and I saw him no more for some time. As I had distinguished myself not a little during the war, General Lake sent me up with dispatches to Calcutta, where Lord Wellesley received me with the greatest distinction. Fancy my surprise, on going to a ball at Government House, to meet my old friend Jowler, my trembling, blushing, thrilling delight, when I saw Julia by his side. Jowler seemed to blush too when he beheld me. I thought of my former passages with his daughter. A.G., my boy, says he, shaking hands, glad to see you. Old friend, Julia come to Tiffin Hodgson's pale brave fellow Gagey. Julia did not speak, but she turned ashy pale, and fixed upon me her awful eyes. I fainted almost, and uttered some incoherent words. Julia took my hand, gazed at me still, and said, Come. Need I say I went? I will not go over the pale ale and curry pot again, but this I know, that in half an hour I was as much in love as I ever had been, and that in 3 weeks I was the accepted lover of Julia. I did not pause to ask where were the 124 offers, why I, refused before, should be accepted now. I only felt that I loved her, and was happy. One night, one memorable night, I could not sleep, and, with a lover's pardonable passion, wandered solitary through the city of palaces until I came to the house which contained my Julia. I peeped into the compound, all was still. I looked into the veranda, all was dark, except a light, yes, one light, and it was in Julia's chamber. My heart throbbed almost to stilling. I would advance, if but to gaze upon her for a moment, and to bless her as she slept. I did look, I did advance, and, oh heaven! I saw a lamp burning, Mrs. Joe, in a nightdress, with a very dark baby in her arms, and Julia looking tenderly at Anaya, who was nursing another. Oh, Mama, said Julia, what would that fool Gahagan say, if he knew all? He does know all, shouted I, springing forward, and tearing down the tatties from the window. Mrs. Joe ran shrieking out of the room, Julia fainted, the cursed black children squalled, and their D.D. nurse fell on her knees, gabbling some infernal jargon of Hindustani. Old Jowler at this juncture entered with a candle and a drawn sword. Liar, scoundrel, deceiver, shouted one. Earn, ruffian, and defend yourself. But old Jowler, when he saw me, only whistled, looked at his lifeless daughter, and slowly left the room. Why continue the tale? I need not now account for Jowler's gloom on receiving his letters from Benners, for his exclamation upon the death of the Indian chief, for his desire to marry his daughter. The woman I was wooing was no longer Miss Julia Jowler, she was Mrs. Chowder Lowell. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.